My name is Lance, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlanta Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature, persons Kerith and Giroux have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Jackie will read the preamble.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Jackie, alcoholic. Hi. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Hannah will read the steps.
Hi, my name is Hannah. I'm an alcoholic. The 12 steps. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all of these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
George will read the traditions.
Great, thanks. Hi, I'm George. I'm an alcoholic. 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on AA unity. 2, for our group's purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself. In our group conscience, our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create special boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Tonight is anniversary night. The format of the meeting will be the 10-minute speaker will speak on the second tradition, followed by our information break. The main speaker, who will speak for 25 minutes, followed by our anniversary celebrants. Our 10-minute speaker is Adam.
Hi, I'm Adam. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Okay, so I'm going to read the long form first of the second tradition, which is, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Okay, I have some notes here. Let me get them. It's funny, with the when I was first asked to do this commitment, Jeff, you know, asked me if I would speak on a tradition, and I looked at him for a little while, and I was hoping that he would change his mind, and he didn't. So I said yes because, you know, I've always been taught that any, you know, reasonable request made of me in AA, I'm to say yes to. So, you know, I had to stretch a bit and learn, get over my neuroses about giving a perfect tradition talk, and just come and be of service. So I don't want to confuse anyone, but the short form of this tradition is actually longer than the long form. So I'm gonna work off the short form because I need a little bit more material. So for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he expresses himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants; they do not govern. So the first part of this tradition is that we have one authority, and that is God. And that's how he expresses himself, is through the group and not the individual, is what I've learned. I love the story. One of my favorite stories is in the 12 and 12. It's, I did some research was AA Comes of Age, Webster's Dictionary, the 12 and 12, the Grapevine article. And Bill tells a story about one of the first instances of the group conscience, which is where he's working at this hospital, and the proprietor, which means owner, is what a man. So his name's Charlie, and Charlie goes up to him, and Charlie's like, hey, you know, you're not doing so well. You know, you're not doing well financially, and you and Lois could probably use a few bucks. So, you know, why don't you take a job here? And he's like, well, that may be a good idea. So he takes the subway home, and while he's on the subway, he hears this voice that says, a laborer is worth his hire. And he's like, oh, I'm supposed to take the job because that's God telling me to take this job. And he gets home and he's really excited. I have a job. I'm going to make some money to do 12-step work. And he tells everybody, it's meeting night. He gets home and Lois is home. And then, the meeting is there. And he goes to the meeting and he says, you know, I got this great opportunity. I'm going to make some money at the hospital. Charlie offered me a job. And the group just like is not excited. And they're like, and they, they say that, you know, if you attach this to an organization, you know, this group is going to perish. And they actually pulled out one of his own quotes, which is, they're like, Bill, remember you always said that sometimes the good is the enemy of the best, which the good for Bill is may be the enemy for the group. So he heard the group conscience, and this is how the group conscience, one of the first instances where the group conscience came to be, and he realized that the voice on the subway was not the voice of God. The voice of God was speaking through the group. On a personal note, I never really consulted, anybody about my decisions before I came into the program. I was very much an I person and not a we person. And when I came into this program, I learned about the we. And I before that, I really didn't have a chance. And I was running my life into the ground, basically. I did a lot of damage when I was up there. And it's funny because I just think about the group in the same way. It's like, I needed the we, and the group needs the we, not an individual to lead, or else we're gonna, we'll have the same, we could run ourselves into the same mess. The second part of the tradition says, you know, our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. I wanted to look up govern because I thought I knew what it meant, but I wasn't really 100% sure. And it means to exercise continuous sovereign authority over or to control and direct the administration of policy. So in our group, tonight I've been asked to lead part of the meeting. I'm wearing a suit and I'm presenting on a tradition, but you know, I'm a trusted servant and I don't govern and I do not keep this commitment. You know, this position rotates and next month somebody else will be speaking here about the third tradition and so on and so forth. Our chair, Jeff R., is, you know, he acts as, for this year, he acts as the leader of this group. And he is, how he leads is he, thank you, I have 5 minutes left. He selects the main speaker, he appoints service positions, and then he leads what's called the steering committee. In the Atlantic group, we have what's called the steering committee, which are former elected chairs of the Tuesday night meeting, and then the current chairs of the other meetings of the week. And they serve as the group conscience. They make decisions on everything from, you know, the cookie budget to, you know, to the spaces, if we need to change space, if we're getting too large. You know, we have a steering committee, you know, largely in part because the size of our group, because we are so large. When I was new, I kind of felt like the steering committee was like, you know, like the VIP room at the Roxy. I was like, who are they? How do I get in? I always wanted to know how to get in. That's like, that was my MO. But I found that they're actually very approachable and they're actually very helpful. And if you have any questions about the group conscience and about this group, you can definitely go up to one of them. Actually, I'm going to ask all the steering committee members for this year to please raise their hand. So these are the steering committee members, and they act as the group conscience. Great, thank you. So back to Jeff. Jeff is, you know, the elected chair, and he does a ton of other things. But you know, my point is that, you know, there's going to be an election at the end of this year, and you know, it's funny because when I first started coming in 2006, I saw Vince, and Vince was the chair, and I thought he was the mayor of AA. I was convinced he was the mayor of AA. I was like, he's totally the mayor of AA. And then the next year, I walk by and he's not the chair anymore and he's mopping the Duke room. And then it really like, I understood that we are all servants of a greater whole here and that there are really no, you know, we do not govern and, you know, we are trusted servants and that's our role as leaders here. So, you know, our chair rotates. So, you know, what's important for me is to be here in November, which is when we elect the new chair, because that's how I have my voice heard. You know, if I want to be heard in the group conscience, I need to be here in November when we do elect a new chairperson, because they do serve as a leader for that year, and that's how I have my voice heard. You know, I read this great Grapevine article too that expressed the importance of the rotating structure, which is you know, this guy is a newcomer and he's at work and he gets this phone call and he finds out that the chair of the group got drunk and he's like, what's going to happen to AA? He's like, you know, AA is going to perish. So what he does is he leaves. He's like, well, you know what? I have the solution. He's like, I was the student council president when I was in school and I'm going to go and I'm going to save AA. I have 10 months, you know? So he runs off and he goes to the meeting and everyone's like cool and calm and no one said anything. And he finally can't take it anymore. And he blurts out, he's like, what's going on? And he's like, what are we going to do? You know, so-and-so drank. And an old timer looked at him and he's like, you know, he's like, that doesn't mean that you have to drink, first of all. And, you know, second of all, he said, we'll get someone to do his job. We rotate chores here. There is no honor connected to the offices, just work and service. And, you know, he's blown away by this idea. And he goes on to chair other meetings, and he gradually learns that, you know, in AA, we don't have authority over others. No one has authority over us. You know, and there's this great quote that says, it has to be love, not government, that keeps us together. And, you know, and that love is the love in God as he expresses himself through the group. Thanks. 1 minute. Wow, I didn't know that traditions could be so much fun. It's quick. So, Lastly, there's this great traditions checklist. I just want to go through a couple with you before I leave. It's like, how on a personal level am I carrying out the second tradition? And it's, I like this question. Do I criticize or do I trust the support and support my group officers, AA committees, and office workers, newcomers and old timers? So it's, for me, it's like, do I challenge decisions that are made? Seat saving. Do I save 8 seats or do I save 2? I wish I could say that I'm always saving 2, but, I have work to do. Do I complain? Do I complain about it? What is my attitude? I love this other one. Am I absolutely trustworthy, even in secret, to AA 12-step jobs? When I was doing the cookie commitment on Sunday night, I had a $50 budget and I was going crazy with cookies. And then I got slashed to $25. So, I thought I knew what was best for the group. So what I did was, I would spend like $26.50, and I was not being, thank you, and I was not being, trustworthy, and I was not being honest. I just got the goodbye sign, but I want to say thank you all for my sobriety and the opportunity to learn more about the group and AA as a whole. Thank you.
Our main speaker tonight is Cheryl.
Thank you. My name is Cheryl McKee, and I'm an alcoholic. And my driver, Brendan, thank you. I like that someone adjusts the microphone. I might be able to use you at my house. I'm single. I need some adjustments made. Anyway, I'm tired of doing it myself. But anyway, I want to thank Jeff. You may be sorry. You may never see me again here. I don't know. For asking me, I appreciate it. I consider it an honor and a privilege to participate in Alcoholics Anonymous. And without Alcoholics Anonymous, am I not speaking into the mic? Really, now I am? Can you hear me now? That guy up there with 53 days, can you hear me? Oh, he left. anyway, I want to thank Adam. You did a fabulous job on the tradition there. I came over here from Jersey, and I think I should get like extra credit for that tonight. We left at like 4, and I just think I should get extra credit because I live in New Jersey, but anyway, you don't get that. I don't get to do it 2 days at a time because I live in New Jersey, but no exemptions. I only have 25 minutes, so I'm going to have to skip, like, the farm animals and some other things. I really like a beefier podium than this, because in case you make adjustments or something, I realize that I have no coverage here. So, a tough crowd. Anyway, which I have been known to do on occasion. But I'm not from here because you guys know I talk funny. And can you hear me now? Am I talking into the mic? Okay. Can I have the adjuster back, please? No, just kidding. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous because I drank, and I didn't do it very good. And I drink because I can't stand being sober. Sober is uncomfortable. It is. That's why I do. I don't fit in my own skin. I don't feel right sober. I feel like, the mothership has dropped me off. I didn't get instructions. I don't know what I'm doing here. But you guys all look like you do. So I don't feel right. I was, I don't want to dwell on it too much, being raised in an alcoholic home, but, it contributes. It helps. things going on in my home weren't, things that should be going on. And, verbal abuse, physical and sexual abuse. And, that doesn't make me an alcoholic, but, it couldn't hurt. And, there was always alcohol in our house, and I don't really know when I had my first drink. It was just always around. And, I just drank at every opportunity. And I'm just going to tell you about my style of drinking. And I know I can't impress any of the old timers here or any of that. I just, it's the new people, and I want to welcome you here to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, if you have a problem with drinking, you're in the right place. And, you know, just stay here. You know, what do you got to lose? I don't know about you, but thankfully my ideas of fun have changed since I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was hurting myself a lot and others around me. And anyway, I hope you can stay here. And, you know, it's not easy. Simple, but it's not easy. You know, and, you know, I got my Alcoholics Anonymous Facebook quote of the day, and it's that one that says, you know, I wouldn't trade my, you know, worst days for the best days drinking or whatever. BS. I would, because I had some good days drinking. I don't know about you guys, but I didn't just, you know, have a bad day and come to AA. You know, I didn't give up hope. I didn't think, well, that was really bad last Friday, but I'm pretty sure this Friday is going to be different. So, yeah, so it wasn't usually. Well, maybe the faces or something have changed, but anyway, now I forgot what I was talking about. I might do that, because that happens. I can remember my phone number from when I was 5, but I don't know where I was yesterday. That's not good to drink in though anymore. So, yeah. Anyway. So, I feel just strange talking into this microphone. It's anyway. All right. Okay, so, you know, really, I just drank at every opportunity, and I drank the same way every time I drank. I drink all of it until I get done, and I don't know when that is. When I start, I knew before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous that when I take a drink, I take a drunk. I'm not having, you know, two and going home. I'm having two. I'm going somewhere. I don't know where I'm going, and I just know I got to go. It's like the call of the wild, you know? It's like... I know whatever's going on good is not here. I got to go somewhere else and find it. And I don't know where that's going to be. And I don't know with whom that's going to be with. And, you know, and I was a pass out and a blackout drinker. And there any new people here don't know the difference between passing out and blacking out? I'm going to try to help you out with that. Like when you're passed out... Like you're laying down, like you're sleeping, kind of. You're not really sleeping, but you're not up. Yeah. Yeah, you're not busy. And there's no feathers involved. Adam wanted me to say feathers. He paid me for that. Anyway, that's kind of okay. But when you're in a blackout, well, it's different. Only your brain is taking a nap. Yeah. And your body is up. Busy. I guess there's a couple of blackout drinkers here. I was a blackout drinker. And, you know, I heard a guy when I was brand new say that he never came out of a blackout doing anything nice. Not helping an old lady across the street, donating to charity, nothing like that. Always some demoralizing, degrading situation. That's how I always came out of a blackout. Sometimes I'd come out of a blackout and I'd have to ask questions. What are you doing? They said, well, you said I could. And I just say, well, I'm here now, and I've changed my mind. Yeah. So that's the kind of blackout drinker I am. Back in the day, you know, they had matches in hotel rooms so I could figure out where I was. Oh, Tijuana, you know, wherever it was. And I thought he had teeth last night, but I don't know. I guess not. Anyway, and then sometimes I'd come out of a blackout, and it's frightening. I would be walking down the street. Am I going there? Coming back from there? Where's there? I don't know. And I don't know about you guys, but that makes me want to have a drink. And so I drink like that, and you know, I don't have two drinks. I don't have wine with dinner. I have wine instead of dinner, because I only need the cork for, like, transportation purposes, you know, so I don't spill any. And I don't even know if I drank anything with a cork anyway. So it was just usually twist off. But you know, when I drink, I don't eat, because it's pointless. I mean, why? Why waste all that money? Why ruin your buzz with food? And so I didn't really eat when I was drinking. I don't work when I'm drinking because, well, it cuts into my drinking. And, you know, sometimes I'd be at work and someone would say, hey, do you want to go have a couple of beers at lunchtime? No. Well, why? Why would I want to? Because I know that if I take two, I'm not coming back to work. I'm going to be in Tijuana or something with farm animals or something. And so I didn't drink while I worked. And then, you know, my dad was an alcoholic. He put whiskey in his coffee in the morning. And I know what an alcoholic is. So I'm never going to do that. So I'm not an alcoholic. By the way, my dad drank away like his pancreas and part of his stomach and some other stuff. But he didn't think it was an alcoholic. Probably just a social drinker. Another social drinker up here. Anyway, let's see. So, what else? So I don't eat when I drink, except every once in a while. You know, you think, you know, you can't get drunk on a full stomach. Everybody knows that, you know. So where I drank, I was usually located next door to some place like Taco Joe's or something. You know, you can get a good meal in there. And I'd, you know, have a burrito, and then, I used to get the dry heaves all the time. You know, the next morning you'd smoke, and, like, air would even come out of my eyes. It was so bad. That was just part of my day. I haven't thrown up since December 18th, 1987. That's a long time between puking, let me tell you. It's just something to shoot for the new people there. That's a goal. It's a goal, I'm saying. Anyway, like, man, I threw up on my way to the meeting. I got these bad hangovers and stuff where, you know, you can see your heartbeat in your eyes and all that stuff, just really bad, and the dry heaves. And, you know, someone, you know, if you take three aspirins, twirl around before you go to bed, you won't have a hangover. Something never occurred to me, if I don't drink, I won't get a hangover. I learned that here in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's amazing how they come up with this stuff. And so I go eat my big gnarly burrito, and then I go to the bar to get drunk. And I don't know about you guys, but the next day, I'd rather have dry heaves than Taco Joe heaves, you know. You throw up, shoot a bean out of your nose. It's not pretty. So you know, I realized burritos are not good for me, so I didn't have any problem giving those up. But so I drink like that every time, and that really didn't change for me. What changed for me was in between drinking, just became more and more unbearable and uncomfortable, and you know, I couldn't live in my own skin, and you know, it talks about in the big book that liquor ceased being a luxury and it became a necessity, and I had to drink, and I didn't know when that happened or how that happened. I don't think I had one big kaboomy moment of clarity and came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a series of them, you know, just realizing things like, you know, I couldn't eat anymore, and I was, I wouldn't drink, because if you drink the next day, like, you're an alcoholic, so I'm not going to do that. So I was always just shaking off a drunk, and I was just nuts, and I needed to drink. And it was just impossible for me to be sober. Just I couldn't stand life and myself. I couldn't stand myself. And I couldn't blame anybody, you know? I mean, I mean, I embarrass my lower companions for crying out loud, you know? That's bad. Let me tell you how low that is, in case you don't have a picture of the kind of drinker I am. The last bar I drank in, we had a horse in there. So I don't know if that tells you anything. Don't go to the Tijuana thing. I know how you people think. It wasn't like that, but it was just in there. Anyway, I guess it's just okay to have a horse in the bar. And, you know, because I don't drink in nice places because they have expectations of you. They want you to be nice. They want you to, like, sit on your bar stool. Don't fall off your bar stool. You know, don't hit anybody with your bar stool on the way out. It was hard to believe such a delicate flower that I would do anything like that. But, yeah. Anyway, yeah, I'm not that nice sober, right? Right. Anyway, you know, I knew I needed to get help. And, you know, it talks in the big book about the alcoholic who's always making a resolution but never a decision. And for me, when the difference was when I made a decision, I had to do something. I had to take some action. I had to get some help. So I asked for help, and it was recommended that I go into Long Beach General Hospital and get sober. And or to dry out. And I agreed. I was a little damp, and maybe I should do that. So anyway, so I was in the shower getting ready to go there, and you know, I was scared, and I started to cry, and I just asked God to help me do whatever it is I have to do. I didn't know I was coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know anything. I didn't know I had alcoholism. You know, I didn't promise to be good, to be a saint, anything. Just help me do whatever it is I have to do. And, you know, from that day to this day, God's held up his end of the deal. And that was July 16th, 1981. I've been sober since I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, and I keep coming here to hold up my end of the deal because I owe Alcoholics Anonymous. Without Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm drunk. Or dead. I don't know where I am, where I'd be now. But, you know, my disease is 28 years worse than it was when I stopped. And it wasn't sharp, believe me, when I stopped. So, you know, I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous in this hospital. And they taught me things early on. You know, never say no to an AA request. And to the best of my ability, I say yes, and even if it's an unreasonable request, sometimes I do it, like, never mind. Anyway, like the Lincoln Tunnel tonight, but anyway, so you know, I was in this place, and you know, I dropped out of school because I had to give an oral book report. So this is, like, impossible for me to do this. And so I'm in that hospital, and an AA panel had come in there, and a woman called on me. And, you know, I was people that were in there with me, they were getting up and reading at the podium, and I think, oh, my God, I am not going to be able to stay here. I can't do this stuff. I can't do what they're asking me to do, you know? And so I went up, and because I said yes, no matter how uncomfortable I was or no matter how uncomfortable I am in Alcoholics Anonymous, if I'm asked to do something, I say yes because I believe that maybe it's not you who's asking me, it's God saying that I'm ready. Because if you wait for me to get ready, I'm not getting ready. If you wait for me to be ready to do an inventory, we'd still be waiting. Oh, I don't think I'm feeling that yet. You know, thankfully where I got sober, they really didn't give a I won't say that word, that they didn't really care how I was feeling. You know, they cared more about saving my life than hurting my feelings. And anyway, so I got up and, you know, introduced myself behind the curtain. I asked if they wanted to hear jokes. I don't know about you guys, but, you know, if you're drinking out in bars where they have horses, you are not talking about your feelings. And I had no idea really what I was feeling. I was just a mess. And it was because of people in Alcoholics Anonymous talking about how they felt and what happened to them that I thought, oh, well, that's I felt inadequate or whatever it was, you know. And that's how I learned here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I don't know. I found a home group. My home group was Bellflower Big Book Group in Southern California. And, you know, it was like this. And, you know, we do all this stuff. We go Christmas caroling and, you know, 200 alcoholics coming up to your door. Really? And everybody's singing a different song, you know. They're not even just, you know, what we're singing, what we want, you know. So, the group conscience. Anyway, you know, and so, you know, they told me, you know, do all the lame stuff. I did all the lame stuff. I did Christmas caroling, and I did whatever they asked me to do. And because of that, you know, I think I've been able to stay here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, not drinking really helps, too. If you're new, try that. And some people forget to tell new people that part. We try not to drink here because it's really hard to work the steps, you know, trying to read the book with one eye closed and stuff like that. And the big book isn't a coaster, just saying, or someplace to rest your crack pipe. Anyway, and that's all I'll say about drugs. And anyway, you know, my life is good today. You know, I wasn't really shooting for living in New Jersey. I wasn't sitting around Southern California thinking, God, if I could just end up in New Jersey, you know, I'm pretty sure my life would come together. And but, you know, I'm a flight attendant, and so I started out in Bayonne, New Jersey, and you know, it was, they have Alcoholics Anonymous there. They have bars and Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I was okay there. And you know, without Alcoholics Anonymous, I couldn't have made the transition. And, you know, I have, I've been through a lot of things in sobriety, some good, some bad. You know, I've been employed and unemployed and thin and fat and married and single and divorced and all that, and I have two sons, and they're in Southern California with my husband and my wife-in-law, and you know, and I have a good relationship with them. I stay at their house, you know. How, you know, one time I made Thanksgiving dinner at their house and had some of my flight attendant friends come over, and just one dysfunctional family there. But you know, it works. It's the best of a bad situation, you know. And you know, and I have a job today, and I'm grateful for my job. And I was just reading the 24-hour day book yesterday about, you know, that I wouldn't have my job if I were drinking. There is no way. I mean, you know, one trip anywhere, drink it, and it's like, oh, I'm not going to make it today, you know. And I know I wouldn't, and I don't know where I'd end up, you know. And, you know, and that job, you know, affords me a lot of privileges, you know, and I'm a big sports fan, and, you know, I've gone to, I only have 5 more baseball stadiums to go to, and, you know, that's fun for me. I got to fly with the Jets and the Giants last year, woohoo. Anyway, but, I mean, that's fun for me, that's good for me, and, you know, I don't know, I have a life, I have a life in New Jersey, who knew? And, you know, I sponsor a handful of sick people, and, and, you know, that's good for me. You know, I'm, you know, sober 28 years. I have to have accountability, you know, I have to show up. I have a home group and a sponsor, and, you know, I go to Alcoholics Anonymous, because if I don't, I'll end up in Tijuana with some guy with no teeth. And, that's not a good look. Anyway, is my time up yet? Can I make up some stuff now? Farm animals now? Let's see. What else? Any? I don't know. I was just trying to go so fast. Anything you want me to throw in, Jimmy? Anything? I don't know. I guess if my mind goes blank, I'm going to shut up before I embarrass myself further. Thank you very much.